Hi, and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler. I'll be your host, and with me, as usual, Steve and Brett. Say hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
We've had some really good feedback about this. It was so good, we thought, well, we'll do another one and see what it's like. How's your week been, Steve?
It's been absolutely fantastic. I've had a great week. Been up some good things. Been really impressed by people leaving feedback and actually downloading our rant from last week. So that's been really positive. So thank you all to everyone who's downloaded it and left us such good feedback.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was impressed. They've let us go on iTunes as well, which was quite surprising.
Bonus.
I mean, I thought it was going to take them like 3 weeks just to tell us no. I don't know, people have been leaving us positive feedback, and it's not just friends and family, so to those people who actually liked us...
Yeah, I'd expect it from my friends and family, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Whether it was good or not.
Yeah, but thank you, you guys. So, Steve, this week, I think you can go first.
Thanks very much. I've actually managed to have some time to have a little look at the internet this week.
As opposed to last week, when you didn't look at the internet at all.
Well, not to look at for the purpose of getting news for us for the podcast. But I've picked up on something which I found very interesting, and I believe that you picked up on it as well, which was Cardiff councillor Mr. John Dixon, who caused a bit of a furore last year over his Scientology tweet.
Yeah, I mean, he did it last year, but it's only about now we're actually hearing that... You know, there's been a complaint made against him, I think. Yeah, I mean, did you read about it on the BBC website first? You didn't find it on Twitter?
I did see it on Twitter first, actually. That's a very good point. I saw a couple of tweets coming through regarding it, because I have such things set up to see the trends on my Twitter feed. And yeah, I picked up on it from there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't look at the trends normally. There's just a couple of the usual people I follow, the usual suspects. It popped up, saw Scientology, and I thought, gotta check this out.
It's gonna be done in there.
So I went and checked it out, and I actually went to what seems to be the article that everyone on Twitter picked it up from, which was from not the BBC News website.
What?
Yeah, seriously, it's from walesonline.co.uk.
Oh, good stuff, Western Mail.
So, yeah, it came off here. So let's just, I'm just scanning through now. Ah, here it is. He said in his Twitter... Or his tweet, I should say. I didn't know the Scientologists had a church on Tottenham Court Road. Just hurried past in case the stupid rubs off. Now, personally...
It seems like a fair comment to me.
I think it's fair comment.
Although I'd be more concerned about them robbing my money as opposed to actually any stupidness wearing off.
Do you think it would overstep the mark? Do you think he...
No, not at all. I mean, if I'm honest with you, I'm looking at this from both angles, and I think that Mr. Dixon is absolutely entitled to his own opinion. About Scientology, and it's probably an opinion which myself and many other people, I'm sure yourself included, share. Where I think he's made a mistake is that previously his Twitter account was called Counselor John Dixon, whereas now it's just John Dixon, or John L. Dixon, I think. And I think therein lies the issue, because the complaint has been made to the council, because this has come from a councillor's tweet, as opposed to just an independent bod making a comment.
Yeah, but...
I think that's where the issue lies.
Do you not think that even councillors are not allowed to have an opinion?
No, it's not that at all. I think everyone is entitled to their opinion. That the problem is that when somebody makes a comment which might be considered derogatory, then it does make a difference where that comment is coming from. Now, if his Twitter account is called Councillor John Dixon, then that could be taken to be perceived as an opinion... of the council.
Yeah.
And that's where you've got to be careful. Had it just come from his normal Twitter feed, just John Dixon, there's no problem, there's no issue, he's entitled to his opinion.
Well, firstly, I checked the definition of defamation.
Thank you.
Because I am, a definition Nazi. I don't know, that sounds quite extreme. but I always like to make sure... You know, without going to stupid extremes, that I know what I'm talking about. But defamation, there's a good defence against defamation, and that's if what you say is true. Okay, if it's opinion, as in it was just a pure, it wasn't a factual thing; it was just his opinion. For instance, if you said, like what happened to Ben Goldacre last week.
Sure.
If you say something like he's a liar, that's making a statement of fact. and it's also one of the most indefensible things you can ever say about somebody, because you're not only trying, you're not just saying that they were wrong about something, that they were intentionally wrong, and there was deception. But calling something stupid is just an opinion. I mean, you can say anything stupid, and it doesn't really matter, does it?
No, of course not. But
but if you're still talking about the counsellor thing,
mm-hmm.
I still don't see it as a problem, because even as a counsellor, is he not allowed to think something stupid, even in his capacity? I mean,
No, in his capacity, but it's how he phrases it. That's the point. And I think, you know, you can phrase something in a negative fashion about something in a more professional manner. I think that's the real issue, is his comments bringing the counsellor into disrepute. It's not necessarily defamation, necessarily, but it is more about use of the term counsellor and whether his personal opinions there can be misconstrued for council opinion, or in some way bring the council into disrepute because he is listed as Councillor John Dixon. Like I said, I share the guy's opinion personally, and, you know, I think this is absolutely ridiculous that it's got to this stage, but I can see why the Standards and Ethics Committee are actually pursuing this for the council. As I said, had it just been John Dixon, fine, I'd have had no issue with it at all. But because it was Councillor John Dixon, that takes it into the realms of the council's business.
I just can't see how, because he's a councillor, that it doesn't mean he can't voice an opinion without this kind of thing going on.
As I said, I think it's how you voice the opinion. I mean, he could have said something along the lines of, I don't know, Scientology Church on Tottenham Court Road. Personally, not sure I agree with this religion or something like that. You know, I don't know. But you can phrase it in a better way than...
Yeah, but
a stupid's going to rub off.
Yeah, I don't... You know, there's no point mincing your words. If you think it's stupid, you should be able to say it's stupid. You know,
From a personal perspective, yes. Not from professional position. I mean, people wouldn't stand for it if the Prime Minister had come out and said it. You know, that would have caused a similar sort of problem. Because it's bringing the office into disrepute. And likewise, that's what the issue is with the Cardiff Council.
Well, what I'm saying is, it's one thing to say something stupid in an official capacity and just completely mess it up.
But, such as David Cameron's comment about the Second World War earlier this week?
Well, yeah, but for instance, I'm thinking now of, do you remember Gordon Brown during the election?
Yeah, yeah.
When he called that woman a bigot?
Absolutely.
Now...
And look how he was pushed from pillar to post over it, because again, he was making an opinion.
Yeah.
But the difference there is, he was making an opinion he thought... In confidence. He thought he was just talking to people in his car. He didn't realize his microphone was switched on. Which does make him pretty stupid. But that's a mistake. The difference is Councillor Dixon has stated this comment for the mass public at large to be able to see and hear from his Twitter feed as councillor.
I think that people, if they want to, in their capacity as councillor, can say something stupid. I think even if they want to make it their official, you know, their official line, you know, well, put it on their website. I'm councillor, and I think this is stupid.
I think there needs to be standards somewhere along the line, and I think, you know, it's about professionalism is what it boils down to. And like I said, you know, had it come from his own personal Twitter account without the councillor on it, there would be no issue. I mean, they wouldn't have a leg to stand on anyway.
So
it gives it an official status by him tweeting it from his a Twitter account called Counselor.
Okay, so in a way, what you're saying, you think the Scientologists actually have a case then?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like I said, I've got no time for the Church of Scientology at all, but I think they have a case, not so much to say from a defamation point of view, but to bring it to the council's attention for the council to investigate it as to whether or not his comments brought the council into disrepute. And if the council come back and say, no, actually, it's fine, there's no case to answer, well, fair enough. That's where it stops, that's where it ends. But that's where the Ethics and Standards Committee comes in for the council. That's what it's there for.
So, and did you have did you think anything about their statement that they felt that his remarks infringe their religious freedoms?
No, not really. Because, you know, let's face it, had he said it about the Church in England, nobody would have batted an eyelid.
Okay.
I think, you know, you've just got some very powerful money people involved in the Church of Scientology, and they're going to look to get some self-publicity. And
yeah, I think litigious is the word there. Personally, I think he even as a council, in his capacity, if he wants to say something, he should. I think the voters you know, if they don't like it, they can vote him out. But what I don't agree with is this standards commission coming along.
When he gets elected as councillor, he agrees to abide by those rules. And, you know, he's made that agreement when he's sworn in or whatever into the council. I'm not sure exactly how it works. But he's agreed to abide by the rules and the structures and laws of the council. So, you know, if that is the rules and the standards committee can investigate him, well, no, he hasn't got a leg to stand on, really. It's fair game. That's what they're there to do. That's their job. What their findings are, wait and see.
Okay, fair enough. Right, I got one for you now. I'd be surprised if you didn't see this story. I caught hold of it, I think it was yesterday or today. Well, here's the headline. Arab guilty of rape after consensual sex with Jew. Did you hear about this?
No, I haven't seen this one at all.
Palestinian man has been convicted of rape after having consensual sex with a woman who had believed him to be a fellow Jew. Okay, so Sabah Kasher, 30, was sentenced to 18 months in prison after the court ruled that he was guilty of rape by deception. According to the complaint filed by the woman, the two met downtown Jerusalem. He introduced himself as a Jewish bachelor seeking a serious relationship. The two of them then had consensual sex in a nearby building, and then he left, basically. So what they're saying is because he told her he was a Jew, therefore she agreed to have sex with him. Now, retrospectively, now she's found out he wasn't Jewish, she feels that because she was deceived, therefore it was rape rather than consensual sex. Now, any initial feelings on this?
Well, that is a really interesting case. I never heard anything like that in my life, to be honest with you. Gosh.
I mean, what's your initial feeling?
My initial feeling is morally, it's wrong. The guy obviously lied and wasn't upfront about his status to begin with. But at the end of the day, she still consented to have sex with him.
You don't think the fact that she thought something else, she thought she was deceived, she believed something else about him, and that, you know, do you think that has anything to do with it?
Like I said, I think there's a real moral issue there, because the guy has lied.
Yeah?
And has, I guess, used false...
Well, yeah, the judge says the sex was therefore obtained under false pretenses. You know, because basically she said, and the judge has agreed, if she hadn't, if she'd known he wasn't Jewish, she wouldn't have had sex. So it's this false pretenses thing.
Yeah, which I can kind of see. I can kind of see exactly where the complaint is coming from.
With things like this, okay, because at first I was like, oh, you know, obviously I feel for the woman.
Yeah.
You know, she was deceived.
But then, you know, without wanting to be too crude about it, I mean, she did open her legs from the sound of it quite easily.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't need to whine which is and dine which her too much.
No, but exactly. But I mean, obviously, you know, if someone says no, no means no, and I totally believe that, and it's a woman's right to say no at any point. But she didn't say no right. at any point.
Yeah. But I look at things like this, and I try and apply it in different ways to see. I try and get rid of it by absurdity. Okay. So I looked at it and I thought, well, does this happen in any other way? You know, do we see this in society? You know, take away the Arab and the Jewish thing. Deception, the word deception to obtain sex.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find we see it all the time. You know, how many times, you know, would a guy, you know, tell a few porkies to a woman, you know, just to get her in the sack?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
you know,
what, are we saying that all of a sudden she finds out he doesn't own a Ferrari? Oh, I thought he had a Ferrari. That's it. That was rape.
Yeah, and I guess that is the best way to look at it, really. I mean, you're quite right. Taking it down to that level, there is an absurdity to it, which I totally agree with.
You know, and it could work the other way for men as well. Men could cry rape. She told me she was on the pill. She wasn't. I wouldn't have had sex with her if I'd known that she wasn't on the pill.
Yeah.
So it works both ways. So I'm afraid.
I agree with you entirely.
The judge went the wrong way on that one for me.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's probably because it is the Israeli Jew thing. Let me guess, it was an Israeli court.
I'm guessing so. Yes, and somebody I can't remember, but somebody said if it had been the other way round, they were suspicious that it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have gone to court. You know,
well, no, I mean, exactly, and I would say that it's just a case of, you know, that guy has been incarcerated purely because he's being tried in a Jewish court, which clearly was always going to be unbiased towards a Palestinian Arab.
Yeah. Great. So, once you reflect, have a think about it, at first, obviously, the words rape, deception, you're like...
Well, yeah, even from the start, because it's made it clear that it was consensual sex all the way through, I would still be always disinclined to say that was rape. Yes, it was deception, yes, there's a morality issue there, from both sides, I think, to be honest with you, because, you know, he's just picked this girl up in a bar, and she is quite willing to go and have sex with him. And he's lied to her about his status. So, yeah, I mean, it's a morality issue there.
But I picked up on the word, morality, right? And especially things with, like, deception, because you were like, well, you know, morality is deception, but... Because although deception is not socially acceptable, and people would say that it's, morally, it's not a good thing, there's no law against that type of deception.
No, you're quite right. And that's something that's purely a moral stance you can come from on it.
I mean, because in society, most people would agree that adultery is not morally acceptable, and yet there's no law against it.
No.
Because a lot of people would be in prison.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I don't know whether that's just an overcrowding thing, or... So, go on then. Have you got something for me?
This is another one. It's about Selfridges.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you've seen this one recently.
I don't follow retail news, general rule.
I'm surprised, because Christmas comes early for shoppers in Oxford Street.
Really?
Yes, one of the country's top stores is to start its Christmas trading 14 weeks before the holiday starts. Yes, Selfridges in Oxford Street is launching its Christmas season on the 2nd of August, its earliest ever start for the store. Goods on sale? Anything from trees, crackers, fairy lights, to a £500 life-size donkey.
Wow. I mean, that is quite early. I don't know what to say about that. For those people that like to plan ahead, maybe a good thing? You want to sort of miss the Christmas
well,
crush?
You know, use an example. I mean, my auntie will buy all of her, sort of, not all of her Christmas presents, some of her Christmas presents, her Christmas cards and Christmas decorations in January, post-Christmas, when everything's reduced.
Makes sense.
Which makes sense. You know, things are still in the Christmas spirit at that point. It kind of flows that you can buy it then. Buying Christmas goods in the height of summer in August seems somewhat ridiculous to me, to be honest with you. And I'm going to take this standpoint that actually I think Selfridges are absolutely ripping the heart out of the true meaning of Christmas.
Oh no! They haven't spoiled Christmas!
They've spoiled Christmas. As a religious person, there's a significance obviously to Christmas for me, which makes it a very special occasion. And I think this is somewhat demeaning to that.
But don't you kind of have to share.
But this is where I'm coming from a secular point of view. I also think that this is wrong, this is out of order. Because one of the great things, and this is going to sound really sentimental and sappy now, but one of the great things about Christmas for me is it's a time for the family, particularly for the children. Children love Christmas. They look forward to it every year. They build up. You know, they get really excited about it. This is just diminishing from that. This is taking away from it. Christmas all year round is removing some of that magic from Christmas.
Yeah, but they're not getting
kids.
Presents every day, though, are they?
No, but the magic of Christmas has just become suddenly, oh, well, Christmas is coming. So what? Because they have such a long time of having it, it takes away any special meaning to it. And I say that, you know, purely from a sentimental point of view. I just think this is, well, it's disgraceful, to be honest with you. I think it's pure commercialism. Absolutely driven purely to try and make a profit.
But I'd agree with that, in so much that the only reason they're selling their Christmas stuff is because there's demand for it. If there was no demand, then it wouldn't be profitable.
But they're creating demand by opening their store. If they didn't open their store, there'd be no demand for it.
Well... Yeah, but then if somebody else opened their store, then the people would just...
Nobody else is opening their store. Selfridges are the first store to do it, and will probably be the only store to do it until about September, when the rest of them join in, which is still too early.
So, Have you got a quote there from Selfridges?
Let me have a look. The only quote from Selfridges is from Geraldine James, who's the Christmas shop buying manager, and she says, "Christmas is coming earlier each year. I can see a time when we offer a capsule Christmas collection throughout the year." And frankly, that just horrifies me. I just couldn't think of anything worse. Well, there's plenty of things worse, but in this particular sense, I can't think of anything worse. I think it's just demeaning, and I think it spoils it for everyone, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I think, yes, shops and stores have to make profits. I completely understand that. But don't ruin Christmas for everyone.
I'm probably going to edit out that bit where you say that I couldn't think of anything worse. we just done a rape story, and I'm sure there's some...
No, I think you should leave it in there.
Probably will, to be honest, because it's less work for me. Are you done on that now? Are you done with your Christmas rant?
Well, I've done my Christmas rant now. I mean, I was hoping maybe you'd want to, contribute something there and jump in.
Well...
What's your take on it?
I just think that,
being an atheist heathen...
No, I don't look at it from that point of view. I just think... I agree with you in so much that it's, they're just cashing in, maybe. It's either going to be profitable or it's not.
Yeah, but you're shortly to become a dad. Think of the look on little Johnny's face at Christmas, if he's been told about Christmas and, had all the Christmas tree and trimmings up since bloody April.
Yeah, but he's not going to have that from April. And, I'm not going to Oxford Street. I'm not going to Selfridges. So they can carry on for all I care.
I thought Selfridges would have been the first shop on your list.
No, definitely not. No,
next to Fortnum and Masons.
I don't know what to say about it. What do you expect? It's commercialism and it's... You live in a capitalist country, Steve. What do you expect?
Ah, my heart bleeds.
All right, this will cheer you up. Not. Okay? This is going to upset you. Well, it better upset you, because it upset me when I saw it. Okay? Now listen to this. This is from our favourite publication. Okay?
The Daily Fail.
It's the Mail Online. I've realised we have to, from now on, if it's from the Mail Online, we have to say it's from the Mail Online, not from the Daily Mail. Because they are kind of separate...
You just reminded me, I would like to come back to this. I haven't printed the story off, but I'll come back to it shortly. There was actually a story on the front page of the Daily Mail this week that I agreed with.
Right, we're losing that in the edit. That's not going to... No. Shut up. Right, listen to this. And I'm going to actually self-censor some of this, because I don't agree with it. Okay? And I'm not a censorship person, so this should be, flashing lights in your brain now, okay, right? This is the headline, okay? Nanny, 30, died from sexual arousal while watching pornography. No, you're not meant to laugh, okay?
Now, sorry, it's very tragic, I'm sure, but...
But what I want to know is, why is that a story? Before I even start reading this, why do you think this is a story?
Because clearly pornography is such a vile, pernicious infiltrator of society that even an innocent nanny who looks after children can be killed by it.
Right. I'm not gonna go into the circumstances of how she died, but the headline pretty much said it. Okay. Now, what? I'll explain something to you, and maybe you'll know where I'm coming from. In this country, when somebody dies, the coroner obviously looks at it, looks for suspicious circumstances.
Yeah, sure.
And that information is then it's put through the coroner's court, and it's all public, and it's in the public interest that when someone dies. I can imagine a lot of people would have a genuine reason to find out the circumstances surrounding someone's death, whether it be family, or whether it just be, it's called transparency, and I'm all for it.
Yep.
However, it appears that somebody, either with the Mail Online or in the pay or doing something for the Mail Online, thinks, I'm just going to trawl all of these... these coroner's reports, find a nice juicy death that will appeal to the, the Daily Mail readers, the Puritans, the people who, the sexually frustrated. And we'll print it. And I think it's a terrible abuse of the transparency of court, which is there to provide a service to the public.
Yeah.
Just to create headlines. And I'm just shocked and appalled at the whole thing.
Shocked and appalled? Well, it's sensationalism, isn't it? Which... we've got to come to expect from tabloid media. You're right, there is no headline in there, is it? I mean, it's a personal life story, probably something better seen on the cover of Heat or some such magazine.
I don't know, I think it'd be below Heat. I think this is a new depth.
It's low, it's very, very low to go trawling like obituaries and coroner's records just to get a story. Absolutely. I mean, you know, there could be an argument that if at least it was somebody famous, it would be newsworthy. Again, it's low. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think, you know, the
celebrity,
private life, but
if it's a celebrity, I can imagine that they'd report on it simply because somebody, another paper or another journal, not journal, you know, like somebody else will report on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they may as well grab the headlines while they can. But this woman, right? She's just a private individual.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to belittle this the woman in question at all, but I mean, who was she? Was she someone who was famous? Was she looking after anybody's famous kids or anything like that?
No, not contained in the story. They just wanted to make the point that a nanny and someone that looked after children, believe it or not, had sexual desires and wanted to indulge, but died on the job.
Think of the children. It's obviously the slant which the Daily Mail are taking from it. I think it's disgraceful. You're absolutely right. I think there's no headline there, and I'm absolutely disgusted at the Daily Mail. Not for the first time.
Not for the last time.
Or for the last time, I'm sure. In actually coming up with such filth, basically. Absolute disgrace.
Okay, mate.
But I really would like to come back to this Daily Mail story, which
okay,
I was talking about.
Go on then. The Daily Mail story that you agreed with.
Yeah, and I actually think you might agree with it as well. That's how groundbreaking this is, which is why I wanted to come back to it.
Go on then.
The story of Gary McKinnon, the hacker from the UK who was being extradited to America. Do you know about this guy?
Yeah, I know about this guy, yeah.
Well, apparently, this week, whilst in America, Mr. Cameron, our Prime Minister, has actually asked Mr. Obama about Mr. McKinnon. And apparently, President Obama hopes to find the appropriate solution to the saga, which is giving hope to Mr. McKinnon's family that actually he won't be extradited, which I think is absolutely correct. I mean, what the guy did was wrong. Let's not beat around the bush. You know, hacking into the security agencies of the American government is illegal and should obviously remain so. I've got no issue with that. But I mean, this guy is mentally ill. You know, he suffers from Asperger's syndrome, and this has never been taken into account by the British court in this country, who've decided to extradite him on a very, very one-sided extradition treaty to the USA. So hopefully it looks that if he is going to go to prison, which maybe he should because he has broken the law, then he'll go to prison in Britain, which obviously means his family will be able to visit him, and hopefully he should be somewhat more comfortable than he would be in the USA, where obviously, you know, going to prison over there with his condition obviously would not be, well, would be catastrophic for him, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I feel for the guy, obviously, you know, with his condition. I feel for the family, because obviously him being taken to America would be a real problem. But just looking at the situation, okay, you pointed out what he did was illegal.
Yep.
So he, therefore, you know, he has to, if we're agreed that he deserves to go to prison, the British court said, well, you know, you have this condition, however, we still think that you're responsible for your actions, therefore mm-hmm. you deserve to go to prison. If there is an extradition treaty in place, then I think...
Well, I say the extradition treaty is somewhat one-sided. I mean, for example, this is a figure quoted by the Daily Mail, so maybe we do need to take it with a pinch of salt, I'm not sure, but I'll use it for these purposes. UK courts are approving 89% of US extradition requests, by comparison only 70% by the British authorities are granted.
That's...
You know, so...
Sorry, what are the numbers again?
So you got 89% of US extradition requests,
so 90%,
UK yeah. courts are approving, by comparison to 70%.
So that's like a 20% difference. What about actual numbers, though?
Doesn't give actual numbers, it's just got the percentage okay. differences there. Now, I totally agree with you. What Gary McKinnon has done is wrong, and I wouldn't excuse that. But I think the man's ill. He's got Asperger's syndrome. If he's taken out of this country where his family can't visit him, and he's extradited to the United States, then that's going to be catastrophic for his health. and I think we have a duty for his human rights to protect him in this circumstances. And I don't see any issue with him doing time in this country or doing time in America.
So
at the end of the day, he's still locked up doing birds.
Okay, but my question is, if that's the case, what you're saying, that he's so ill that if he goes to America, you know, why has that not, you know, why are they still extraditing him then? Why do the judges still think, well, we still got to extradite him?
Well, I guess the point of view is
are you saying that they're wrong? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I that's exactly what I'm saying. Right, I think they are absolutely 100% wrong. I would be inclined to say that the reason why they are supporting the extradition is to curry favour with the United States.
So you think it's just purely political
manoeuvring? It's purely political manoeuvring. And that's why I'm glad to see that actually Mr. Cameron has picked up on this.
Well, you're really going for it today. So first of all, there's a Daily Mail article you liked.
I know.
David Cameron.
I know. I want to stab my own eyes out or something. I don't know. But this is a watershed moment for me, really. But I've got to say that, you know, what he's done is wrong. But, you know, come on, let's have some compassion here. Let's not take some guy who has got a mental condition and remove him from his family and send him thousands of miles away to a different continent to incarcerate him when he could be incarcerated just as easily in this country.
But you're kind of arguing against extradition for everybody, though, kind of, really, aren't you? Because you're saying, well, we can just imprison them here. So you could say for everyone, because everyone's going to be hurt. You know, everyone's going to feel the pain of being put in prison in America.
Look, what I would say in this case, he's committed a crime in this country. He wasn't in America when he committed this crime. Now, extradition had, for example, I mean, I think there was a case a couple of years ago of a British guy who murdered somebody in America and fled back to the UK. Now, they've committed a crime in America, they should be tried in America, and they should be extradited back there. But this is a guy who hasn't committed a crime on American soil.
The thing is, things like law and jurisdiction have to change with the times, you know. And as technology's moved on, obviously, they've identified that, obviously, if you break into a computer in another country, you're breaking and entering in that country. Just because you're not physically there, you know, you're still, you know, and I think they all agree, all the countries agree that. And things like you bringing up the numbers of, you know, 70% to 89%, making mm-hmm. that comparison, that's kind of a red herring. Because what you're saying is he shouldn't go because he's ill. So I'd stick to that. I think that makes those
statistics irrelevant. You're right. I was just making the point that part of it is that I believe he's been extradited to curry favour. That's part of my argument. Is I think that's why he's been extradited, and I think that's what those figures back up. Is that actually we're extraditing people to America purely for political reasons and posturing to gain favour with the American system. That's my opinion on it. And I think that's why Gary McKinnon is being made an example of, is because they want to curry favour with the Americans. At the end of the day, he's made the top agencies in America look like an ass. That this guy with a home computer has hacked the top security computers of the American government basically makes them look like idiots, doesn't it? And that's the whole purpose behind the extradition, I believe.
Okay. I mean, I just, you know, I haven't made my mind up on it. I mean, if he's unwell, fine. You know, defend him on that. You know, the judges are wrong. But, you know, I think there's a lot of, just, it's anti-American, a lot of the rhetoric about this. You know, and I just wish, I'm not talking about you, I'm just talking about a lot of the stuff I've read in the media.
Yeah, I mean, as I'm talking to you, I've actually looked at it online and just reading, just, again, this is from the Daily Mail online, or Mail Online rather, and this is just giving a bit more of the terms, and this, I think, is reasonable, which would be, Gary McKinnon would not have to spend a single night in a US jail in a deal being thrashed out by UK and American officials, the Mail can reveal. Under the terms of the agreement, the Asperger sufferer would be guaranteed bail before facing a trial in the US for hacking into military computers. If found guilty, he would be immediately transferred back to Britain to serve out any custodial term. That, to me, seems perfectly reasonable. I just don't think this guy should be going to prison in America.
Yeah, maybe, you know, it just sounds like the Americans just want him over there to try him, to have a trial.
Yeah, publicity of it.
But I don't know who they're trying to appease, because the security services, they're just the security service. There's no individual that's been harmed here, there's no... particular interest group.
Well, no, again, and that's my issue is why, you know, why are we being, or why are the Americans, why are we being so heavy-handed on a crime which hasn't really hurt anyone other than the pride of the American security forces?
Yeah, I mean, I quite often when it comes to, you know, deciding if things are, you know, good or bad, I'm quite often a consequentialist. But I think when it comes to if someone does something illegal that could have caused damage, just because they didn't cause damage, I don't think that necessarily makes it right.
No, I'd agree with that. I wouldn't disagree with it. A bit more background just about the story, because I think it is pertinent, is that the reason why Guy McKinnon hacked into the computers was he believed genuinely that the American military were trying to keep secrets of UFOs away from the public. And that is part of the paranoia which is brought on by his Asperger's syndrome.
Okay.
What's next?
Right, well, it seems as we're on the topic of America.
Woohoo!
I thought I'd do this one. I just want to get your reaction to the picture, okay? Just so, tell me what you think, okay? Right, yeah. Okay, here
Sarah
we go.
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin, okay? She's created a new word.
Right.
She's so smart. She's gone and created a new word called...
Is that because she just didn't know the actual word for it?
Yeah.
Bless you, the maybe, word to
it. It seems to look like that. The new word is refudiate.
Refudiate, okay. And what does refudiate mean?
I think she was trying to say repudiate. Okay.
Right.
Now, there is actually a serious story here as well.
Okay.
So I'm getting you with a double whammy here, okay? What she's saying, right, is, World Trade Center. Obviously, there's a lot of construction going on around there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And somebody said that they want to build a mosque there. Not, obviously, just a big mosque where the towers were, but they want to build a mosque, I don't know, a couple of blocks away from the incident or something.
Yeah, I mean, and let's be honest, you know, I'm sure that, you know, obviously other than the obvious, the extremists involved, that in the tragedy that happened on that day, I'm sure it did affect quite a few Muslim people's lives.
Yeah, plenty of Muslims died that day. I mean, it's well documented. But she seems to equate all Muslims equals the people that carried out the terrorist attack.
Yeah, all Muslims are extremists.
Yeah, I mean, that's what she's saying. And she's actually saying she's trying to get everybody to go against the building of this mosque.
Yeah.
So that's what she's calling for. In her official capacity, well, she's not governor of Alaska anymore.
No,
she
stood down so that she could concentrate on preparing the way to stand for president next term.
Okay. Now, I'm going to say something. I'm going to take a leaf out of Mr. Dixon's book here, right? This woman, right, is stupid. There's no other way.
Absolutely. I mean, I would have completely and utterly wept for the future had she ever got in on the McCain ticket.
Wait. She's gonna run again.
She is, but hopefully by now her reputation will precede her. Well, we're talking about Americans here, aren't we?
We're talking about Republicans in particular.
We are, and they did elect George Bush for two terms.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
So, I mean, I'm not going to rail on this whole mosque thing because, I mean, it's just obvious that she's just been a prat. And she's been...
Well, she's barking mad and she's a bigoted... I mean, you know, Gordon Brown would be perfectly in his right to call her a bigot.
Well, yeah, I think anyone is. And she's, you know what, but she's just, in general, she is a complete idiot, right?
I totally agree with you.
I mean, and, you know, there was an interview with Matt Damon and I think he pointed it out.
Matt Damon.
Yeah. This woman honestly believes, right, that 4,000 years ago, right, there were men riding around the dinosaurs, okay? She thinks the Flintstones was some kind of documentary.
I saw that interview as well. It's horrifying. I mean, it is absolutely horrifying that this woman is able to wield political power. The fact that she was ever voted governor of Alaska, the fact that she was considered as a running mate for John McCain... It's just seriously...
Potential vice president.
It's seriously worrying, isn't it? Well, I dread to think how she would handle any kind of international dispute.
Yeah. And she will be running for president again. We know that she said it.
Hopefully, though, the Republicans will put up alternatives to her.
No, they love her. They honestly love her. They love her image, her the hockey
well,
man
I,
image.
I kind of thought, though, that from the last election, they did view her as a bit of a liability.
Yeah, well, They got no one better then, obviously. Obviously, the other people are even more bigoted and even more dumb. The woman, if I ever I see her on telly, I usually do turn over.
You know? Oh, yeah, she's beyond contempt, unfortunately. You know, she is quite a horrific woman who I fundamentally and will always disagree with, despite me obviously agreeing with the Daily Mail this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't speak too
yeah,
soon.
Yeah, I'll try not to speak too soon about that, yeah. Go pay then.
Go on then. Give me something to get annoyed at, or at least, you know, maybe
well,
think
about. Well, I thought you would have got annoyed at the Gary McKinnon thing, to be honest with you. I was quite surprised that you didn't pick up, you know, you didn't get quite passionate about that, you
know? I'm not without heart, you know. I mean, I work in IT. I'd love to be some cool hacker breaking into, you know, but it's a crime, and... Either,
but the IT crowd is about your life.
It is. I am Moss.
Yeah.
I think he's got more social skills than me.
When are we going to see you on Countdown?
I'm rubbish at Countdown, so never. Go on, Henry. Go on. Give me something interesting.
Well, I haven't really got
you can't say it's been a slow news week.
No, I mean, I've got one for you, but I don't think this is... I don't think, to quote, you know, Family Guy, this is going to grind your gears. To be honest with you,
all right,
which is the graduate tax proposal being rejected? You know, with Vince Cable, the business secretary, coming out earlier in the week, well, last week I think it was, basically saying, not in so many words, that you know he'd be pursuing a graduate tax as opposed to the current loan scheme which we've got. Only for a Conservative minister to come out and say no, there's not going to be a graduate tax. Student fees, quote. In particular, is something which I actually do feel quite strongly about and have done for many years. When I was in university, I mean, I opposed and lobbied MPs against the introduction of tuition fees because I fundamentally opposed them. Now, whilst I agree that, yes, education needs to be funded from somewhere, I don't think tuition fees were an appropriate way to do it because all it's doing is it's saddling our young people with ridiculously high amounts of debt. Before they even start their career. So yeah, I've always been opposed to it. And even back then, in the heady days of 96, I suppose it was, the talk was of a graduate tax, which, you know, yes, we need to pay for our education. As a graduate, I would quite happily pay more tax to pay for my education. The issue is, of course, is that it means that the money, rather than going to the universities directly, will be going through a central government pot. And I think that's been a sticking point, for several of the universities.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I've always been against tuition fees in any guise, you know, any amount. I agree with that. I didn't pick up on the story until it was a bit late. I saw bits and bobs on it. I didn't have time to read it all.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was really one of the issues which swung my vote towards Liberal Democrats at the last election.
Yeah.
Was definitely. Because they had pledged to do away with tuition fees, but they had the honesty to come out and say, actually, we've pledged against tuition fees. We're not going to be able to afford to do it in our first term of office. It's something we'd look to for the future, and I respect them for that. And that was one of the things which really turned me towards them. So this, for me, is really disappointing that they're still pursuing tuition fees with the possibility of actually increasing them as well, which I find quite horrific, to be honest with you. Tuition fees were originally brought in under the guise of widening access. I don't understand how that was ever going to happen when you're charging people for education.
So you think that, obviously, the Lib Dems have given too much away in this coalition, then?
Well, I'm not so sure they have. Clearly, you know, the coalition, there seems to be, you know, just several small little cracks there at the moment. I mean, this week you had, you know, Nick Clegg, Prime Minister's Question Time, talking about an illegal war, having to retract his statement a couple of hours later because that wasn't the view of the Conservative Party. Then we've got this, you've got Vince Cable saying one thing one week, a Tory minister saying something else the next week. I think it shows the fundamental differences in the parties.
I think Vince Cable will be livid.
Absolutely, I think he'd have every right to be as well. You know, I think it's quite undermining of his position as business secretary. So no, I mean, you know, you've just got some message coming out of Tory HQ against the word of the business secretary. You know, it shows, I think, it's just a few cracks starting to form.
Yeah, definitely. But, no, in principle, I agree. Tuition fees, not good. It's all about making ends meet at the moment.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I totally understand that. And I guess the issue boils down to, I think there's another issue here as well, which is about widening access to higher education. Now, I think that was the purpose behind the tuition fees, was that actually it would give more money to universities, they'd be able to offer more places. I think was the general idea initially. However, I just don't necessarily agree with the government's direction on this. I think the Labour government had a target of getting something like 50% of 18-year-olds to go to university. I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with...
I think 100% of 18-year-olds have the opportunity to go to university.
Yeah, that I agree with.
But I don't think they should actually have a target of saying we want to get 50% into the university, because university may not be suitable for some people.
No, it isn't suitable for everybody.
And, you know, I think the government would be far better off investing money in vocational courses, apprenticeships, and actually looking to give people the skills to be able to obtain a career, a job, in something which is actually appropriate for them. Rather than, I feel, over the years, what has happened is that the degree has actually been degraded by the sheer volumes of degrees which are now being awarded.
No, definitely.
In what can only be described in some cases as a Mickey Mouse subject.
Your take on it is quite similar to a lot of people in business, in the private sector. You know, you're not as much of a lefty as you think you are, I think, you know. Right, I've got some science news.
Science news, okay.
This, when I saw it, I thought, that is the most amazing thing I've heard for a long time. You've probably heard it. Malaria-proof mosquito engineered.
I saw it very briefly. I saw the headline. I didn't actually read the article.
So scientists in the US, they've genetically engineered a malaria-resistant mosquito. So that means this mosquito, obviously, gene encoding, protein encoding, whatever, it can't act as a vector for malaria.
Yeah, sure.
This is massive.
Absolutely, and you know, this is how science should be used.
Yeah. I mean, the number of people who die from malaria every year.
Yeah, I mean, this is something which is life-changing and huge and something which is beneficial to a whole lot of people.
Africa itself, I mean, I think the people dying are in the millions every year.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
I mean, you can't even conceive of a million people. You know, you can't conceive of that many people just dying.
No, I know, it is horrendous. I mean, it is disgraceful that, you know, we as a Western civilization has allowed that to continue for so long, particularly as malaria is quite easily preventable, you know, through the use of mosquito nets, through, you know, medication. But, you know, these people don't have access to this. So if we can use science to create something along these lines of a malaria-resistant mosquito, then I think, yeah, fantastic.
Do you not think, obviously, this is going to... there's going to be certain people that are going to think this is...
You've got the whole playing God argument again, and, you know, it's a GM mosquito. And, okay, yeah, maybe there, you know, so there may be some dangers, I suppose, and maybe that mosquito needs to be kept under observation and viewed, and, you know, make sure there's no other sort of mutation which could damage its environment, which would be catastrophic for that creature. But as for the whole playing God thing, I don't see it. I mean, my opinion would be that God has given us a brain, and God has, you know, inspired these people to come up with this solution, which they've used their God-given gifts to come up with. Let's use it. Let's do it. Let's do some positive. Let's make something positive in the world, and, you know, have these big companies, these big corporations, actually doing something useful to help people.
Okay, no, that's a good take on it. Yeah, it's just some people get really freaked out by GM stuff. You know, I know for a fact Prince Charles is going to be really upset with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, there are issues. I mean, GM science is still very early days. And, you know, we don't necessarily know what all the effects are going to be long term. So, yes, you've got to take your time with these things. But we don't stop the research because we don't know where it's going to lead. Which is one of the things...
That's kind of anti-science,
yeah,
in a way,
which is one
really?
Of the things of the Bush administration cutting down the stem cell research.
Ridiculous.
You know, this is something which could have a huge benefit on many people's lives. So, no, I'm all for that, and fair play.
Okay. Have you got anything?
No, you carry on.
Okay, I got this one here now. I want to get your take on this, because the story itself is just the usual American bigotry, and it's just a civil rights issue. But I just want to run something by you. Hawaii governor who vetoed civil unions compares them to incest.
Wow, strong words.
Right. Okay. So what she's saying is she's defending the marriage as a man and a woman thing.
Sure.
Okay. So she doesn't want any gay people getting married.
Adam and Eve, or Adam and Steve.
Exactly. You know, it's almost like they came out of her mouth.
I'm sure she has said it.
So So yeah, so she said, oh, well, you know, there's other people who don't get let get married, like brothers and sisters and cousins. So first of all, someone had to point out to her that the laws in Hawaii actually...
Yeah, I think the issue there might be, though, I may be wrong, but I don't think Hawaii has a very large proportion of rednecks. I think, you know, she may have a slightly different opinion if, you know, maybe it was like she was in Montana or something.
Well, you mean she'd have been more for incest?
Absolutely, yeah, that's my point.
Well, this is what I wanted to bring up, and let me know your thoughts on this, okay? I've been thinking about incest from... Hang on.
Do your brothers really want to know that, John?
Yeah. Right, let me rephrase that. I've been considering the topic of incest. And I've come to the conclusion that, as far as all the arguments go against incest, I don't accept that there's anything wrong with it.
Ooh, controversial. Well, apart from the weakening of the gene pool and the genetic deformities which come from, you know, inbreeding. Which we know that is fact. It is scientific fact.
It is a fact.
You get genetic deformities from inbreeding, which is the real issue.
Okay. So, right, let's go with that. I mean, I expected that to be the first thing out of your mouth anyway.
Damn, I'm so predictable.
Don't think I haven't thought of that, okay? So what you're saying is, it's actually not... incest isn't wrong. Having children that are deformed is wrong.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. It's putting yourself in a situation where you may give birth to deformed children because of your acts.
Okay, so incest would be okay as long as they were sterilised.
That, again, is a bit extreme, Jonathan.
I just played my ace card. Now,
well, no, because I can't agree with that because, you know, relationships break down. And, you know, these people might want to go off and have children later on in their lives with a non-family member.
No, I'm not saying the state sterilises them. I say they decide to sterilise themselves.
Yeah, but what if they change their mind? You can't turn it back.
Well, I don't understand how what that's got to do with... We're talking about whether it's right or wrong. Okay?
Well, yeah, I just...
And you're saying it's wrong.
I suppose if they make... You're right, if they make the decision to do it, fair enough, good luck to them, get on with it. But, you know, they can't force them to make that decision.
Right, so that was my point. My point is, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the act. It's the consequences.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you're quite right. I mean, you know, I think I couldn't logically see any reason why incest, if there were no consequences, would be necessarily wrong.
Okay. That's right. I'm glad we're on the same sheet. Right, here's the other thing, though. If we're consistent, okay, so we're saying, right, we're going to legislate against incest.
Yeah.
On the grounds that there's a... Let's just define it as a higher than normal chance of genetic deformity.
Okay, yeah, I'll go along with that.
Okay. If you legislated on that, okay... then why are you not being consistent and legislating against people that carry genetic diseases anyway? We allow people who know that if they have a child, that child will have that genetic disease. Why are we allowing them to breed? We're now looking at eugenics.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So now, what we're doing is we're being inconsistent, do you not think? By saying, you can't have children because there's a high chance your child will be deformed, or will have a disability, or however you want to put it. However, people that have...
I would say, and I'm not necessarily sure this is the right argument here, but I would say probably in that case, the brother and sister who are doing it have a choice. They could procreate with someone who wasn't their family member and have perfectly healthy children. The person who has a genetic disorder... unfortunately has no choice, and that shouldn't preclude them from having children.
I don't know, I don't buy that, because that's like saying you can't choose who you love.
No, that's very true, you can't.
So I think we want to try and protect people's rights,
but sometimes, you know, it's
to have children. I mean, either, because you are saying you're not having children because there's this consequence, and so you're saying that that consequence is a bad thing. That is eugenics, if you're saying...
I'm not disagreeing with you on that at all. I just think it's a matter, that becomes a matter of choice then, doesn't it, yeah? The brother and sister have a choice in this, whereas the person who has a genetic disorder which will be passed on has no choice.
But the person with the genetic disorder does have a choice. They can choose not to have children if they're being responsible.
But there's not always a guarantee they are going to pass the disorder on, is there?
Yeah, it depends on the genetic disease. If you've got a dominant gene that...
But you know, John, this goes back, I suppose, at the heart of it to our earlier topic, really, with the mosquito. Why aren't we looking at genetic engineering to stop the genetic deformities anyway?
Well, yeah, because yeah, you're completely right. If they said, right, well, you know, brother and sister, the sister gets knocked up, we can go and make sure that child doesn't...
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at it from a purely basis level, we're not considering gaining morality in you, which I think is a subjective thing, and you can't really necessarily always bring that into it, but I think, you know...
Sorry, I thought that's what we were discussing. We were discussing the moral issue.
Well, yeah, the moral issue would be that a brother and sister wouldn't get it on.
Right, but morality is based on something, isn't it? You don't just make up a rule and call that a moral rule.
No, you're quite right. Look, you're spoiling for an argument now, right?
And
I do fundamentally agree with you. Right. Yeah, but the objections would come...
I know objections.
At the basis level, I absolutely agree with you. Yeah? At the very, very common denominator, I agree. Yeah, if there was no danger of a genetic disorder being passed on, well, yeah, what's to stop a brother and sister getting together?
Or a mother and daughter, a mother and son, or like a father and daughter?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of thing then is, I guess, bordering on, depending on when the relationship starts, on the whole sort of paedophilia side of things, which, you know, is different.
Yeah, but we already have laws against child abuse and rape, so, you know.
Well, yeah.
We're talking consensual now.
Absolutely, but you know, I think that's a different matter. But let's stick with the brother and sister analogy at the moment.
You feel more comfortable
with that? I feel more comfortable with that, yeah.
What I was getting at with the morality thing is, we decide what is moral and what is not. Well, it depends, sorry, on your worldview here. But usually when you decide something's moral or not moral, it's on, for instance, I mentioned consequences. You know,
yeah. You're right. I mean, but again, you know, just going back to the point you just made that we have laws against rape and, you know, this sort of thing. We've also got laws against incest.
Right, but
so just to pick you up on that, you know, you say you've got laws against rape, you've got laws against child abuse, we've got laws against incest.
Right, okay.
So why then does that law against incest take any less precedent than the law against...
Because my morality is not guided by the law. My morality is guided by a moral framework. Okay?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Your morality would say that, you know, it's fine for brother and sister to get it on. The morality of society, I would imagine, is at large, which is where the law has come into play in the first place, would say that, no, actually, it is wrong.
But I'm arguing that they're wrong.
That's your opinion.
Yeah, well, I know that. Yeah, but this is an opinion podcast.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But the point is that doesn't make any sense, though, does it? When you're talking about laws, and you're saying we've got a law against child abuse, somebody out there, who personally I would think would be a very sick individual, may be going, hey, I'm okay with child abuse. It's great. Why don't we have it?
No, yeah, I know where you're coming from. But, sorry, the point I was trying to make is, within my moral framework, okay, child abuse... rape, they are bad things. I agree with the law on them. I'm not trying to put forward a thing where everybody's, you know, moral framework is valid. But what I'm saying is, the way laws are made, okay, I believe that they should be made based on, like, the real world. First of all, the premises that they're based on must be true.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we could talk about drugs policy. You know, the politicians seem to want to ban all the drugs. And they're being completely inconsistent because they allow alcohol. Maybe this example will work better for you, okay? Because it's not such a, you know.
Well, no,
weird
no, no,
topic,
no, no, no. Let's,
okay?
Let's save the alcohol and the drugs for a different debate. Let's stick with what we're talking about, because
okay.
I think, you know, let's carry on with that, because I think you can go on to a different debate with that, and we can go on and on. You know, the issue here is you're saying in your morality framework, you don't see incest as a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. My argument is, okay, well, that's fair enough. That's your morality framework. Somebody else's morality framework may say child abuse is fine.
Right, no, no. But what I'm saying is, my morality framework is based on reality and based on something that can be measured.
Yeah.
Consequences.
Yeah, okay. Which at the moment, the consequences in the reality are you'd have a disabled child.
Right,
or
okay.
Or genetically.
Yeah. So I'm willing for them to, and this is the point I want to make, I'm willing for them to say that we're going to legislate against it. Okay, but they must be consistent, and that therefore they should, if they're going to say that we can't accept these consequences, therefore we're going to legislate against it, then I am saying they should be consistent, and that they should say, therefore, people who carry genetic diseases should not have children.
Yeah, but again, this is what comes back into morality issue as well, the morality being that most people would say that the brother and sister have made that choice to get into that relationship.
I don't know if it is a choice.
I think people make choices like that day in, day out, John. You know, I really do. I think it's about morality. And it's, you know, person's individual morality.
Okay.
But and, you know, people, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of brothers and sisters out there who've felt that sort of attraction, but have not done anything about it because of their morality framework, which is what we're coming on to at the moment here now.
Okay, all right, while you're thinking of that, how about this, right? There's been, there was a story on the news recently. There was a couple, right? They met and they had kids and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out at a later date they were brother and sister separated at birth, okay?
That's a terrible thing. And, you know, again, that would be something where if they'd known they were brothers and sister, they would never have had kids. They'd never have got married.
Well, you don't know that for a fact.
I'm assuming. I'm making that assumption.
But what I'm saying is, did they do anything wrong?
No, because they were unaware, although, you know, ignorance is not a defence in the law, is it?
No. And I believe that they did try and prosecute them, and there was a big hoo-ha. Because for once, society thought, that is a bit odd that we're, you know, we're doing them for something, which came, you know, but it's just because it's a technicality.
Yeah, no, you know, that I think is, again, in its own way, is a tragic case. Because, you know, again, I'm making assumptions, but I would probably guess that had they been brought up in the same household, or even with a knowledge of each other, that would never have happened. What we're talking about is it's a moral issue, really.
Yeah, I know, yeah, but I just, you keep on saying it's a moral issue.
And well, it is, because you see, I say again, at the base level, I agree with you. Yeah, the pure base level. But you've got to bring in the issue of morality, and I would say society as a whole would look at this and say, and this is, you know, obviously excluding you from society, I think society would look at it and say, no, actually, that's wrong. It's morally wrong.
Is morality just defined as what the most people think is right? I don't think it is. You know, just because 90% of people think something's wrong, does that make it wrong? And this goes back to adultery you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, no, I guess you're right, again, to some extent. But I mean, that's using child abuse as a topic, again, as a point of morality. Ancient Greece had no problem with warriors using boys for sex.
Right.
Their society accepted that.
Yeah.
Our society would be outraged by that.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I mean by the whole difference in morality and the way different people look at things. And I think, you know, the mass of society at the moment would look at that as being wrong, just like the mass society would look at incest as being wrong.
But, like, with your example of the Greeks, looking back at that, I can say, if you're having non-consensual sex with someone, that was wrong. That was wrong then, and it would be wrong now.
If it wasn't wrong then, you're judging them by our standards.
What other standards do I have?
Yeah, but by their standards, they were absolutely right. They were doing nothing wrong.
So, but if you, so you're saying that originally, slavery was okay?
Yeah, well, look, absolutely, that is exactly what I'm saying, because that is the way society looks at it. Society's views changed. Yeah, through the efforts of people like William Wilberforce.
Yeah, I know that people's attitudes have changed. But what I'm not asking you what they thought. The question I'm asking is slavery wrong? As in, it's always been wrong, and the people just didn't know it was wrong. I'm asking your opinion.
Well, no, because that's our opinion. Yeah, in our opinion, slavery is wrong. In the opinion of the ancient Greeks, no, slavery was absolutely right because people were punished through slavery for any slight against the god or against somebody who they defended.
Okay, let me rephrase the question. Do you believe it was wrong for the Greeks to keep slaves?
By the terms of their society, no.
No, I'm asking you. I'm not asking about that. You're trying to be them. I'm just asking you personally.
From my personal perspective, yeah, it's wrong.
Right. That's it. So slavery was wrong. Child abuse has always been wrong. Just because some other person thought it was okay didn't make it.
No, you see, I don't agree with your line of logic here at all. You cannot apply that because, by the same thing, incest is wrong. Because it's always been wrong.
Ah, but I've just put together a logical argument saying that there's nothing, unless you base it on, okay, an argument ad populum, as in everyone thinks it's wrong, therefore it's wrong, which logically you can't.
Which is what you're saying, because you're saying everyone thinks child abuse is wrong.
Wrong, actually. I can defend child abuse on proper moral grounds, not just on everyone thinks it's wrong.
But that's you're just saying is child abuse has always been wrong. We look back and we will say child abuse has always been wrong.
No, to the
ancient Greeks, it wasn't wrong.
No, I said if I look back, okay, and I see child abuse in the Greek times and I see slavery, okay, that was wrong then, just as it's wrong now.
By your opinion.
But what I'm saying is, you know, we have a framework of morality.
And that's what I'm saying, society as a whole, that's exactly what we're talking about. Society is a moral framework, and that moral framework of society is saying incest is wrong. But you disagree with that.
No, my moral framework is not based on society.
Yeah, your moral framework. You're saying child abuse is wrong, slavery is wrong, and yeah, people would agree with you. Yeah? Society as a whole would agree with you. But society as a whole doesn't agree with you on incest.
Yeah.
But you're saying, well, my opinion's right.
Yeah, of course it is, for me.
Yeah, because that's your opinion.
Right.
But my argument is, yeah, you're entitled to your opinion, you can have that opinion, that doesn't make it right.
Okay. No, I know it doesn't necessarily make it right.
Yeah?
Okay.
That's my argument.
If you saw something, I don't know what it is, if you saw something, okay, and there was no one around for you to ask, there was no society for you to ask, do you think you could work out whether it was right or not?
That's a very difficult question. I can't answer it because, you know, again, through my understanding of morality, then I would say, yeah, that's wrong, child abuse is wrong, slavery is wrong, because that's with the society which I'm in. Yeah. And as an individual, unless you've got other people to help you, I guess, come to those conclusions, you would just be feral. You would live life without morals, without any sort of idea of society. And humans, I don't believe are made to be feral.
Not like you were Mowgli and just brought up on your own. Like,
right.
I mean, say you were stranded on a desert island tomorrow. I know this is like a big thought experiment. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
You're put on a desert island tomorrow. You know what you know now, okay?
Yeah.
You have grown up, you got experience, okay?
Yeah.
You see something, and you don't know whether it's right or wrong. You've never seen this thing before. But you think, is that right or wrong? How would you not be able to work it out because there was no society for you to ask? There's no Daily Mail to read?
Well, no, you'd make your own personal assumption, wouldn't you?
Okay, but how do you work out whether something's right or wrong?
I don't know, you just do it, don't you? It's a natural thing. You look at something, you make that decision.
Because otherwise what you're saying is morality is completely, you know, it's whatever you want it to be.
Well, yeah, because look, to some extent it is, yeah, because... No, that's not what I'm trying to say at all. Morality, I think, is made up by society. I think society...
A society's morality is made up by society.
But I think that influences your own as well, because I think...
I'm sure it
because
will.
Because your morality, wherever you've come to, has been influenced by other people. Even if you've come to a decision which you think is right, which is maybe opposing your parents, your teachers, whatever, you've still been influenced by something to come to that decision. You wouldn't have necessarily come to that decision if you hadn't had those influences in the past.
Have you never rethought something and changed your mind?
Yeah, I have. Which is absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Like, my parents were conservatives.
Yeah, absolutely. You're quite right. You do change your opinion. You sometimes will go against what you've been brought up with. That's absolutely.
What I'm saying is, I used to be a conservative. In fact, I'm sure I voted conservative once.
Boo.
For something. Because that's what I was. That's how I identified. My family were conservatives. I felt it was tribalism. Okay.
Yeah.
But then one day, I just sat down and I thought about things.
Yeah.
And I decided, I just looked at everything, and I thought, is everything that I believe right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it true? And that got me into a lot of trouble because I ended up having to go and find out what is true. How do you know if something's true or not?
Yeah, but I guess you were still guided by other people's morals and society's morals in those decisions that you made. Because I'm assuming, unless you've got some big confession to make here now, you didn't go out and murder someone.
No, I didn't. But I can defend
so
my...
So you still live by the morals of society?
No, I don't... I believe I can defend my opinion that murder is wrong, okay, without deferring to society. I can give you my moral framework, and I can explain it to you, and how the rules work, and it doesn't require anybody else to tell me what to think. So, to say that... I will not lie, I have been influenced by people, and I am influenced by people. Someone tells me their opinion. If it's someone I know, I respect, I might be swayed by them. But if I sit down and think about it, there's a chance I'll agree with them if I think they're right. There's mm-hmm. a chance I might disagree with them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is...
But you're making that consideration based upon your experience and based upon things that you've learned through your life.
Yes.
As part of society.
Right.
Yeah? So, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is generally morality... You can have your own morality, but generally morality is decided by society.
I mean, it's a fact that you're brought up in society and so you're influenced... You know, your parents tell you, don't do that, don't do this.
Sure.
And I understand that as a fact. That does happen.
Mm-hmm.
But just because your parents tell you that something is right or wrong, does that necessarily make it not right or wrong?
No, you're quite right.
So that's what I'm saying.
But that comes back then to the laws of the land, doesn't it?
Right. No,
yeah, and, well, it does, because you have to live within the laws of the land.
We agree, when we live in society, there's a social contract.
Yeah,
we agree.
Which, then, going back to the point at hand, the laws of the land say... Incest is wrong.
Correct. And I agree that if anybody breaks the law, goes to prison.
However, but I don't know what the exact rules of why incest would be illegal in this country. One of those reasons would be because of the increased risk of deformity. I don't know what the other reasons are.
Okay. The only point I wanted to make was I believe the law is wrong because the law is not based on rational reason. Whereas I think a lot of law is. Don't kill people. There's a rational reason not to do that. Don't steal, there's a rational reason for that. Don't rape, there's a rational reason for that. All these things are based on empathy, okay? That's how I would define them. However, incest does not have any such basis. That's my only argument. I rest my case. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Nope.
Great, I'm done. Right, well, that wraps it up for this week. Thanks a lot, guys. Catch you next week. Goodbye. Can you believe in this? They tell me.
compass in a world. Isn't true.